Good evening. I'd like to call the December 6th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Good evening. Would you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God,
roll call of members.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Present.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson? Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
I'm here.
Ms. Chalk? Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
The 13 members present?
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications around the desk.
Do we have any members of the public who'd like to speak? Welcome, Brian.
Okay, thank you. Taking a little bit back there. It's a little quick. Brian Eden, 147 North Sunset Drive, here as an individual, not as one of my committee assignments. I just wanted to remind members, I just learned late last week that there's going to be a public hearing and a comment period on the inlet dredging project, and the hearing is on Monday at 5:30 in Common Council Chambers, and the deadline for comments are 12:16. So we're all, you know, involved with the gas drilling comments, and now we're having to evolve over to this other issue very quickly. And the project is far more important than many of you may realize. The MC held a program last Thursday. We have more than 70 in attendance. It was a pretty stimulating presentation and discussion, and we all left there fairly energized. We're hoping to bring some of that energy to you folks here. The proposed project is fairly pedestrian, and that's at least partially due to the DEC's opposition to the inclusion of any innovative ideas in the plan. It suffers from many of the same deficiencies as the SGIS. A vertical gas drilling perspective and a hydraulic fracturing world. The DES actually comes out and calls it unambiguous regulatory opposition to the proposals to create wetlands and other natural features in the inlet. And here's an example, just one example, because of the shortness of time. I don't know if anybody saw that ClimeAid report that was released 2 weeks ago. It's a collaboration between Columbia and Cornell and some other universities, and it's called Integrated Assessment for the Effective Climate Change Adaptive Strategies in New York. As you know, increased temperatures, increased moisture in the atmosphere are leading to more intense precipitation events. As you realize, to the east of us, Binghamton has had 3 100-year flood events in 6 years. We've been fortunate to evade that, and I don't know how long our good luck will continue. So we need to look at what kind of impact this will have on the local community. So our streams that run through the city and into the Cugulate are disconnected from their floodplains. Like, if we have large amounts of water in there, it's going to cause serious problems because, unlike the Mississippi, we can't blow the levees. You know, so even at the mouth of the Cuga, the wetlands that were all the way through Stewart Park and through the golf course and through the Truman Marina were filled, raised to 100-year floodplain level, then to a 500-year floodplain level. So this is a bottleneck for water that's passing through the city. Can't move as fast as it should. So the beneficial dredge materials can ameliorate flooding events and enhance the ecosystem functions of this whole system. There are many positive models throughout the country. We'd like to look at them more closely here and possibly apply them here. So with your support, we can do much better with this dredging project than has the project that has been proposed. So thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Anyone else? All right, legislator privilege of the floor. Anyone? Pam?
Well, I just hope you all notice that two of us are in the holiday season, and we sit next to each other, so I...
We didn't even plan it that way.
Dooley is two.
Blue Christmas.
And the blue. Oh, is that it, Pam?
That was it.
Oh, okay.
All I have to say.
I'm waiting for the
It
minute.
Was just, yeah, it was on my mind, so I had to speak my mind. And that's
thank
all
you.
That's on my mind.
Thank you. Carol, Nathan, and did I see your hand, Will?
Okay. Yeah, I just want to let people know that the Strategic Tourism Planning Board will be holding a workshop on January 10th from 4 to 6 p.m. They, in particular, would like to... It's open to the public. They, in particular, would like to invite legislators. They'll be discussing their long-range plan, strategic plan, the next iteration of that. They're making important decisions, in particular related to balance and priority to just existing grants programs as we know them, while at the same time trying to define some new aims as well. So that might be an important meeting to think about. January 10th, 4 to 6 p.m., and I don't have the location yet, but watch for it.
Thanks, Carol. Nathan?
I just wanted to say that though we have many things to complain about with the governor and the state legislature, I thought it was interesting, the news today, about the deal that the Republican leader, Dean Skelos, of the Senate, Speaker Sheldon Silver, and the governor came to agreement on a tax deal, which raises about $1.9 billion in revenue by lowering the taxes on those that are, under $100,000 by about 0.5% or 0.4%.
I heard 40,000, income 40,000 to 300,000.
Yeah, 40,000 to 300,000. By about 0.4%, and then increasing the taxes on the wealthy to about, 8.85 or something like that?
Starting at $2 million.
It's $2 million and over. I would have hoped that this agreement would have actually addressed people, those between $300,000 and $2 million. I think that's an area in which they can go in the future. But I still think it appears like a good deal because it's something that both parties have agreed with. Which is very unique, and if we had that type of cooperation in Washington, I think we'd be at a better place. Also, that deal includes $50 million worth of flood support for flood victims. I think that's a really important amount of money. Hopefully, it could be more in the future, but I think that's also a good aspect of this deal today.
Thanks, Nathan. I have Will, Leslie, and then Pat.
Thanks, Martha. In that we have people in the holiday spirit, some of us will be going to the post office, and as you may have heard on the news, our post office is approaching a real crisis. And the way it's generally been reported is that it's sort of stuck in a hard place because of declining business, a fixed rate for postage, labor situation, costs that are expensive, et cetera. Something that I have not been reading or hearing about, and a factor that is huge, is something that was set in place in 2006 with what was supposed to be a reform measure called Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act. And what this did is that it required the post office to basically fund health benefits for the next 75 years and to do that in a 10-year period to the point of about $5 billion a year. That factor alone is what is creating this current crisis. And it has not been widely reported. I would encourage all of you just to pay a little more attention. Post office is a basic government service. It's been operating pretty darn well since Ben Franklin's time. And it would be very, very sad to see it diminished and going out of business. And secondly, as many of you may have noticed, we have some new neighbors. If you go out in the park, there are a number of people who have set up in an encampment. And regardless of what you think about the Occupy movement that has happened around the country, I would encourage everybody, if you have 5 minutes, just to wander in and chat with some of the folks that are there. Ask them why they're there. And you probably will get a variety of responses, but I think it takes a certain level of commitment to sleep outdoors in this kind of weather, and a number of people are doing it. So, thank you.
Thank you, Will. Leslin, Pat, and Mike.
Well, I don't have anything as profound to report on as what's going on with the post office or the Occupy movement. Thank you. I didn't know that about the post office, and so I'll take a look at that. But I do want to encourage all you boxing fans out there. I am a huge sport nut, and boxing is one of my favorite sports. And this is especially for Frank. It's been a long time since we've had a boxing match in Ithaca.
You and Frank. So,
pardon?
You and Frank?
Frank and I.
Frank and Ben, you had to ruin the surprise. Come on.
I'm Leslie's man.
For the record, Frank and I are duking it out for the chairmanship of the legislature.
All right.
That is the first bout. Okay? And so you know I've been training with Sylvester Stallone, so watch out. We are ready. But the Greater Ithaca Activity Center, GIAC, is hosting its Chet Cashman Boxing Classic. If anyone of you know of Chet Cashman was the father of our boxing program. The boxing program began in 1968. It's the oldest program at GIAC at the Southside Community Center and moved to GIAC when we were born in 1972. And it was born out of trying to find an alternative for young men of color who were getting heavily involved in drug use and drug trade and all of those, and find a place for them to channel some of that energy and be a little bit more disciplined. He was really concerned and concerned about a number of them going to jail. Said, here's something else you could be doing. So there is some positive behind how the program got started. So each year we try to host a boxing match. Chet unfortunately passed away earlier this year. Is very dedicated to not just the boxing program, but to the mentorship of young men and women in this community. Many women joined the boxing program as well. So it's our oldest running program, and this Saturday we are having a boxing match at the Beverly J. Martin Elementary School, 3 p.m. It's a 12-bout card featuring boxers from Ithaca, Elmira, Cortland, Syracuse, and Rochester. It is sanctioned by USA Boxing, which is the Amateur Regulation Association for Amateur Boxing. So it is bound to be dynamite. Please come on out, support the boxers, support the program. And it's Saturday, December 10th. It's before the holidays, and I know you don't have a whole lot more to do. It's going to be exciting. So you're all invited. Small admission of $10 for general admission, $7 for seniors and children. So please come support the program. And Frank, I will see you there. If not for any other reason, just to see Frank and I, you know, box it out. We're guarded. We got it. You're on, Frank.
What time is it, Leslie?
Good luck, 3 p.m. No, he doesn't stand a chance next to me,
right.
Martha, so thank you
That's
for giving him
saying.
Some good luck. 3 p.m. at Beverly J. Martin Elementary School gym.
All right. Thank you, Leslin. Pat, Mike, and Frank.
Thank you for telling us about that, Leslin. I know when I was teaching at the high school that the boxing program was an important part of the lives of a number of the young people that I worked with, and they really benefited from it. So I'm glad to hear that it's still going on.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
And sort of touching on one of the things that Brian mentioned in his report. Thank you, by the way, Brian, for your report. And I'm sure that when you think it's appropriate to bring any kind of information to any of our, to our standing committee, I guess the PDEC committee, if there's anything you want us to consider by way of support, I'd certainly be interested in hearing that at our committee meeting. I wanted to mention in relation to flooding in the Binghamton and Owego area that we are still continuing to send teams every 2 weeks down to that area to help with the flood cleanup. And we are indeed fortunate here in Tompkins County that we haven't suffered from the level of flooding that's taken place right next door to us in these counties that are so close. And if any of you are interested in going and helping with the flood relief effort, Marcia Lynch is in charge of organizing the teams. I forgot to get her phone number handy and her email address before I started the meeting tonight. So if you would get in touch with me, my contact information is on the county website, and I'll be sure to pass that on to Marcia and let her know. And that goes for anybody out there who's watching who would be interested in coming to help. There's still much work that needs to be done, and the people in our neighboring counties would be very, very grateful for your help.
Thank you, Pat. Mike.
Thank you. I have a statement I'd like to read on what I think is a serious topic. The time in which we annually elect leaders of the legislature is close at hand. In the 14 years I have served, proposed leaders have been vetted in a private process, and the vote at the organizational meeting was pretty much predetermined. For next year, I would like to propose that we use a more publicly transparent selection process. I've been a proponent of our committee form of county government. We have an appointed administrator rather than an elected county executive. It is good government, and it fits well with the highly educated demographic of Tompkins County. I believe that one of its strengths should be the rotation of leadership and committee chair positions. I have spoken of this both as a member of the public and as a county legislator. Sharing these positions makes the group better informed and serves the public well. A few years ago, I served on a Facilities and Infrastructure Committee where every member had served as chair. It was probably one of the best functioning committees I can remember. When I speak of rotation, I'm not saying that every legislator has to chair every committee, but rather that there be regular change. Rotation of the chair and vice chair of the legislature and of the committee chairs is not and should not be viewed as criticism of job performance. Those in place have served well. Changing committee chair positions does not mean those legislators have to leave their committees. On the contrary, their continued input can strengthen us and be a real asset. Rotation of chairs is not term limits. We all continue to be elected as usual for our terms. Term limits is when the voters do not re-elect incumbents to office. I know of what I speak. Leadership and chair positions have limited authority and are simply first among equals. I would like to see changes in leadership and committee chairs for 2012. As legislators, we need to function as a cohesive group in an atmosphere of mutual respect, trust, and pride. To begin this, I propose that this time the process for election of chair and vice chair be a free vote of each legislator at our organizational meeting in January. I would further propose that those interested in either position announce themselves publicly well in advance and be willing to discuss their candidacies with their fellow legislators and with members of the public. To that end, I am announcing tonight that for 2012, I am interested in serving as chair of the legislature. Over 14 years, I have chaired many committees and have served as vice chair. I believe I have demonstrated serious leadership. If selected, I would not be entering into the position with any ideological agenda, but simply with a desire to work with all other legislators to represent our respective districts and to come together in the best interests of the people of the county as a whole. I am aware of others who have indicated interest in the chair or vice chair position. I will not, of course, state any names, but I urge them to join me publicly, declaring early on if they would like to be considered for these positions. I believe in good government and good government that can be constantly improved. I believe that this new process will be a step in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, Frank and then Jim.
Not to demean the seriousness of what Mike has just announced, but I want to remind you that Leslin has already blown our cover, that we're going to have a boxing match on Saturday to determine which of us will become chair of this board. So
that's public. That's public, Frank.
Is that a public announcement?
Public.
Okay. I've got a couple of items for you. Please check, this is under my consumer title. Please check your phone bills when you have a chance. The universal fund charge, my all-time favorite, has changed again. It's going up, which means that a chunk of what you're paying, that little niggly amount of money, is going up, and I think Paul is following that pretty well for us, so we can get tapped. We actually may get a check. Maybe all the noise we've been making for how long, Karen? 10 years? We might finally get a piece of the action. The second, again, on rates, you should have all received in your, if you haven't, you will, in your NYSEG bill, a change in rates for the next period of time that the PSC has given them permission to apply for. The problem is the print on the notice is so small, it isn't funny, but you might want to pay attention to that one as well. And then I have one that I'm afraid I have to pick on Jim Dennis a little bit. Those of you that have been on this legislature for a while know that this is a reminder that Jim periodically, usually at the end of this month, comes out with his list of 10 most critical and his wishes for the next year, and he reflects on how they went for the past year. And it's one of those things that some of us really hang around for. So I just want to tip you off that Jim is probably preparing the list now. And if you have an inkling and want some input, you may want to nail him early. The other person that does this is Newt Gingrich. So just thought I'd tip you off.
And we're close.
Also, thanks, Martha.
Thank you, Frank. Jim?
I don't know how to top that. The only thing I could do is present the top 10 list, if I develop one, the same night Leslin knocks Frank over the road. You know, but at any rate, what I wanted to talk about quickly, there's an event coming December 11th, 1 to 2:30 at IHS at the new Performing Arts Center. It's called Love Those Letters. It's a premiere of a book that's been passed out to every child, every preschool, every K, and I believe one in Tompkins County and out of Tompkins County by the Family Reading Partnership. This Sunday afternoon, the book will be premiered, and Amy Dickinson of Ask Amy is going to be there, Dr. Lavelle Brown, and this event has and Cal Walker, John Simon. This event and this project has been sponsored by Kionics and the Triad Foundation in giving this book to all the children in Tompkins County at that age. And if you'll notice, if you go by the tennis court, all the letters are up on the fence down there. And if none of you can attend, maybe you know children that and their parents that could attend. And it'll be a really fun event sponsored by those two organizations, and I'm sure people would enjoy being there. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Dave and then Dooley.
I'd just like to let everybody know that the Newfield Depot Road Bridge is now open.
Thank you, Dave. Dooley.
I'm very relieved it's open because I got tired of hearing the rants on WHCU about how we weren't letting them know anything. I wanted to talk about something more related to what Will mentioned about our neighbors in the park and about the Occupy movement in general. I just came across an article called Occupy the Constitution, which I thought was an excellent title. And what it talks about is, at first, the criticisms made of the people who are parts of these Occupy gatherings, that they don't have a single message, as though that's a criticism. I don't think it is a criticism, but what does encompass a lot of the different topics that they're concerned about is something called the Environmental and Social Responsibility Amendment, ESRA, to the U.S. Constitution. it's the work of a network of people, of other people, and passing a constitutional amendment is very difficult. But this one sounds like something a lot of people could get behind. Article 1 says the Constitution's 1st and 14th Amendments shall apply only to human beings, not to corporations or other artificial entities. And Article 2 mandates that corporations uphold standards of environmental and social responsibility in their operations. And it goes on from there, including the procedures for implementation of this. And since the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision and the preceding decades of mischievous finance affecting our elective processes, something like this has been increasingly needed, and I'm just delighted to see it's out there now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Julie. Anyone else? All right. We do not have any special presentation or legislative discussion. For my report, a couple of items. I want to congratulate the Tompkins County Council of Governments and the members of the public of Tompkins County and beyond, who came on Thursday, December 1st, to a public hearing that was the TCOG put on to gather comments on the DEC's environmental impact statement on gas drilling. It was, I think, a really fantastic event. I think the people who spoke gave really quality input. We were pleased that Diane Carlton from Region 7 of the DEC was able to be there and hear that in person. And especially pleased that Michelle Potteroff and Karen Fuller have spent the last 2 days inputting comments that we received at the meeting, as well as through the county website since the hearing. Those are all being assembled and will go, once we get the transcript from the hearing, the official transcript, they'll go in a nice big fat package to Albany, to the DEC. And I think it is just a great testament to our community and many volunteers who helped put the event together. And so it was, we did the same thing 2 years ago. It was similar, but I think the comments were even more quality. The video from the whole hearing is also online. I'm not sure whether it's on the TCOG website yet. Maybe we can get a link to that. I know it's at shaleshockmedia.org. People can go there, and it's well segmented, so you can actually click on an individual's name and go to their three-minute statement. I also want to talk briefly about what's happened with the Department of Health and the CHA, Certified Home Health Agency regulations in New York State, and then turn it over to Frank. I assume maybe that's why you're here, Frank and or Joe, to talk about this. We heard, I think, pretty much out of the blue through a memo that there were going to be so-called emergency regulations promulgated by the Department of Health about certificates of need for certified home health agencies in New York State. In recent years, there's been a moratorium on new certificates, and that's why our certificate has value so that we could sell it to HCR, which is what we took almost a year to decide whether to do and how to do. The new regulations, which are called emergency because supposedly the imminence of the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, which is ridiculous because it's not in any way imminent. The state of New York has failed to pass the legislation needed to move that along. But these regulations have been promulgated and will be voted on Thursday by the Health Planning Council of the State Department of Health. These regulations would allow pretty much anybody to come in and pay $2,000 to get a license, get a certificate of need, and open a CHA in any county that has fewer than two private CHAs, fewer than two non-county CHAs. That includes us. It includes seven other counties that are in the process right this minute, of doing what we've done, which is to decide to divest of our county license and to move to contract with a private provider. This one regulation, with in one fell swoop, will eliminate the financial value of our license. Eliminate the $850,000 value that HCR has promised, you know, and negotiated with us to pay for the license. It has a number of other very severe impacts, and my own sense is that among the reasons for outrage about this is that it's being done so fast with very, very little forethought, it would seem, with no time, essentially no time for public or county input. Among the justifications in their memo is that there will be no fiscal impact to counties, which is obviously not true. That there will be no effect on the quality of care, which we also believe is not true. So since this is being clearly, you know, we've learned a lot about Albany recently, and what you see is not really what it is in most cases. So we figured out that this is not being directed by this health planning council, but there was direction from probably the governor's office or the Medicaid redesign task force that was doing this to plug a budget hole. So we have spent Frank, Sigrid, and Brenda at the health department initially, and then Joe jumping in, and then I piled on with all of us with phone calls and written documentation. We've made contact with the lieutenant governor's office, with the governor's office, with different people at Department of Health, and submitted our comments. I want to thank in particular Frank Proto for jumping into this and contacting Senators Amaro and Seward and Nozzolio. Dooley helped us by walking over to describe the whole thing to Barbara Lifton, who's also been helpful. Irene Stein, who was our former director of the Office of Aging and, you know, high official in the Democratic Party, has been helpful. And the State Association of Counties, NYSAC, has jumped into this as well to make a to make this a serious issue, to put it on the radar, saying this is really not acceptable. So the meeting is Thursday. We don't know whether our protests will have any effect, but I personally just wanted to thank the folks who really jumped into this on a very fast track and hope that we're successful. So, Frank, if you want to add anything, please correct me or add anything, or Joe.
Okay. I actually think you framed it very well, Martha. I don't know what else I can add. I can emphasize a few things. I think we need to, because this is a really serious issue. The Department of Health in the state has historically moved at a snail's pace, and that's driven us crazy sometimes because they move so slowly. They move slowly because it's important that their decisions are very carefully made. They deal in human life, and they take their time to make sure they get it right. We're dealing with the situation, as Martha has said, that was revealed to us on November 15th. And the rule change is being considered for approval on December 8th. So in terms of the time we've had to react and the time the public has had to react and the opportunity for knowledgeable people to provide insight and perspective to the state, there's been no time. So we are doing what we can, and I will tell you, I think we've taken a leadership position in New York State to help articulate the issue to other counties who are equally angry. There's something like $10 million in lost purchase prices that are at stake here, but it goes beyond economics. I think we need to be careful in reminding the state as we talk to them. It does go beyond economics. We took a year to make a decision about the CHA, in part because it's important public policy, in part because once we made that policy decision, we wanted to make sure that we transferred this CHA to an agency that we were confident could provide quality care to clients. We took our time to do that. So in terms of the effect of this action in creating a passing lane for other CHAs to come into counties, that attention to the care provided by agency, the quality of care provided by the agency, is lost, and that's important. it's not only counties who have transactions on the table right now, although we are certainly the most affected by this. It's also counties, and we heard from one during the debate about the child, like Little Tioga County, that's quite comfortable in providing home care through a county agency. They make money. They do it well. They have a high quality of service. Abruptly, they're going to find that their market is going to be flooded with other agencies who will severely destabilize the provision of home health care in that county. And I think that's a case study of what will happen throughout New York State. It's really about a home health delivery system. It's being affected here. It's being affected in the course of 2 weeks. So this county has been the one to, I think, jump on the table and raise the red flags and try to rally other counties to support an opposition to it. But Martha said it. This does undermine the relationship that we had put together with HCR. It puts a monkey wrench into that process. We will devote ourselves to figuring out what do we do next with that. But I don't want to call it unconscionable, but it certainly is a bewildering act by New York State. I'll say one last thing, and it doesn't come from us or what we presented. It's a comment from the Home Care Association of New York State. This is not just public home health care agencies. It's 400 health care providers, CHAs, nursing homes, licensed care facilities, and so forth, 400 of them. They begin their response by saying DOH's proposal effectively guts the public need process for CHA establishment. And that, in fact, is what it does. So we are doing what we can to...
Excuse me, Joe, could you repeat? I didn't hear that statement that you were
yep. quoting. DOH, the Department of Health's proposal, effectively guts the public need process for CHA establishment. Again, we've referred to it as a passing lane. It's a fast lane into counties to provide this care. There's a belief that the more the merrier, that the more agencies you have, the more competition there is, and competition is good for economics. Well, sometimes it's not. I think we found that when we looked at our own CHA. So we just wanted to bring the legislature up to speed on what's happening, and hopefully we will have some effect on the decision that's coming on December 8th.
Okay, I've got Pam, Jim, and Kathy. We just want to mention that the memo that Joe and I worked on yesterday and today has been emailed to you. So that's in your boxes. So Pam, Jim, Kathy, Peter.
So Joe, who wins by this? I mean, what's the motivation here? Right? There's got to be somebody that's pushing this, somebody very powerful that's going to benefit by this.
It's the right question. I think the motivation is what I tried to just describe. I think there is a belief in Albany that competition is a good thing. It will drive down the cost of providing home care. And you recall when we looked at our CHA, we wondered whether having two CHAs actually drove the cost up, not down here. That it's hard to spread your overhead when you have too many CHAs in one place. So again, I think the state's belief is the more competition you have, the more costs will go down. The state's also trying to encourage home care agencies to develop managed care plans. That's an important part of the economics. The states hope that they can reduce the cost of Medicaid over time. They believe that this will do this. This will bring CHAs into the marketplace that provide that kind of managed care approach. So those are the two stated goals. I don't believe this is a revenue-raising device on the part of the state because, as Martha said, we think the cost of the license is $2,000. They're basically giving away these licenses.
That's the generous explanation. You'll remember that part of the budget process last winter, early spring, was the Medicaid Redesign Task Force, and they came up with a deal. And nobody really knows. I mean, somebody knows what the deal is, but there was a deal where a bunch of different things were done to Medicaid and so-called saved. I think was it $4 billion in Medicaid at the state level? Pick a number. Most of the cuts were to providers. They would still be required to provide the services. There were few cuts to clients, which many of us were pleased about, but there were cuts to providers. I am concerned that there was a trade, that providers said, okay, we'll accept those cuts, if you open the floodgates to allow us to come in and do Kentucky Fried Home Care. You know, franchise all over the state, don't have to really, you know, we can, and if we have a statewide CHA, then we can have a really low economy of scale, and we'll undercut the existing infrastructure. So there's a lot of information in this stuff that we've put together. We can send even more than what you've already got if you're interested, but it's really concerning. Jim, Kathy, Peter, Will.
Joe, as we went through the sale process and the budget process this year, we advertised publicly that we were going to be receiving revenue in the $100,000 range. And I think, are you able to comment on that, on what we expected and where it would be and anything related to that?
Fortunately, our budget does not assume any purchase proceeds. We did not budget any sale proceeds. By the way, that separates us from some other counties that did. I mean, we're talking to 7 or 8 counties right now that are in the process, as Martha said, and some of them assume that they would get those purchase proceeds and they can put it right in their budget and it would pay for things. It would help them do things like stay within their tax cap. So they're in a tough spot. The way we characterize this, you recall that we talked toward the end of the budget process about using reserves to pay for certain one-time things. And I recall saying to the legislature, I felt good about the fact that we could expect those reserves to be replenished by sale proceeds. So the impact would be basically neutral as we pulled down, I think it was $350,000 for one-time capital items. If this has the effect we think it does on the buyer and the sale price, we will certainly not get $850,000. When we talked about this in the budget time, we said even if we can net half of that, it's $425,000. I don't want to go through contract terms right now because we really should go through an executive session to do that. But I will tell you that this will have a profound effect on the value of our child.
Kathy?
Thank you. I have 2 comments. As one of the people who pretty vehemently opposed the sale of the child, because I thought, as many people in my district and throughout the county feared, that it would lower the quality of service and that it would lower some of the equity of the way that services are delivered. I find it ironic now to hear us bemoaning the fact that under this emergency regulation, the quality and the distribution of service is going to be harmed. Putting that aside for a minute, because it doesn't do any good really to Monday morning quarterback, except to note that in the letter and in the memo, we're bemoaning the loss of a lot of key personnel who understandably left the county when they realized their jobs were going to be lost and that we may not have any way of recovering that level of service to the county. What I want to do is see if I can translate what I've been hearing, and I'm just going to put it in bald, cynical terms. Am I hearing that private industry may have pushed these regulations to try and profit off of this and that the result is going to be pretty much a devastating effect on local distribution of care, at least as far as we can tell? I mean, it sounds, you said there's no, as far as you can tell, it's not the necessarily New York State going after revenue, which is the first thing I thought of, but then it's kind of paltry sums compared to what they need. So, and I heard Martha talk about it kind of like a deal was made, which is not unfamiliar to many people around this table, although we do bemoan it when it's done at federal and state levels. Certainly when it happens here, sometimes we look the other way. But I'd just like to know, is this a buyout? Is this corruption? Is there anything we can do?
You go for that, John.
Yeah, I'd like to, yeah, I will, and I'd also like to come back to the first part, too. But I will tell you that the industry opposes this. That's the Home Care Association. Again, that's the home care industry, private and public, opposes this action strongly, and they feel very frustrated that they haven't been heard in this process. I know that HCR, we've talked to HCR directly, they are shaken by this because they have invested heavily in getting into other counties, and now somebody can enter those same markets with a $2,000 check that in some cases they've spent $1 million to acquire. They're not supportive of this. So, again, I can only respond the way the industry is responding right now outside of us, and that is they're opposed to what's happening here. With respect to the quality of care issue, I understand what you're saying about that. However, had we done nothing with the CHA, we would have owned a county CHA, and we would have been operating it, and we would have awakened on November 15th to find out that the state was not only allowing but encouraging new CHAs to come into our county to provide competing service to ours. So we would have found ourselves in the same box, even if we had.
We would have had great employees.
We would have had good employees, but if anything, because the state has specifically targeted counties with less than two private CHAs, they're going after us, especially counties with less than two private CHAs. We are currently at one with one private. We're moving to two, but we would have been right in the center of the bullseye, even if we had kept things the way they were under this new reg.
So can I just ask a follow-up? If the industry isn't supporting this, then are there aspects of another portion of a healthcare industry? Who wants to buy it? I mean, should we form a corporation and come up with $2,000 and buy it back? I mean, who wants this if the home healthcare industry doesn't want it? In somewhere in the healthcare industry, is there a group that would benefit from this that we expect to see moving in with Kentucky Fried Healthcare, as Martha so eloquently put it?
Yeah, I think there's subtext here. Frank, you mentioned that there's another association that is pushing it.
Well, I was hoping that my question might be answered by someone.
Well, Frank mentioned to me today that he learned about another association, so I was wondering if he...
Well, the general question I asked, though, I was hoping that Joe might answer.
Yeah, I'm not aware of who the winners are here. I mean, imagine you're an HCR-type agency that's entered a new market, and you've spent $1 million to acquire it, and now somebody can enter your marketplace and compete with you for... And they're not carrying that high overhead. Could the county kind of reemerge with another county-run CHA at our peril, because we could find ourselves with not one but several other CHAs competing for our business, many of whom could offer lower cost through lower overhead than we could. So if anything, I think the environment's going to get more difficult, more hostile, and more difficult for a governmental CHA to operate. I don't know who the winners are, Kathy. Yeah, really.
I'm just thinking of multinational healthcare conglomerates that have at their disposal low-wage workers that they can bring into an area that actually they would have, I think, an advantage in this. And I wonder who those players are, because I'm not big in the healthcare industry. I know of at least one person around this table that might know some of those players, and I guess Frank is another one. But I understand that for us at this point, especially with the recent emergency move, we're not in a good place.
Yeah, and I'm not willing to speculate. I could speculate farther than what I already have, but I won't. But Frank Proto, and maybe Frank Krupa has some to shed on this, and then we'll go to Peter, Will, et cetera. Okay.
K comes before P.
Okay.
I feel like I should say something, but I'm really not sure what to say. Obviously, the policy concerns about why you do this is something for you all to debate. I think our biggest concern from the beginning of this is a fundamental change in how New York State has addressed need for home care services, and it's happening in a matter of 3 weeks. And that's the issue, is that a lot of these questions that you all are raising, we don't know the answers to. And there may be legitimate reasons for doing this. There may be a longer picture vision out there that the long-term benefits might outweigh the short-term damage. But we haven't had the chance to even understand their thinking, why it was done, or be able to put forward our reasons for what the unintended consequences to these actions might be. And so, fundamentally, that's the biggest challenge. Certainly, this has pulled the rug out from underneath a well-thought-out, well-laid-out plan for over 18 months, and we're rapidly having to try to adapt to that. But it really is the time frame and the fundamental shift in how we're going to address need. And I think, as Joe was discussing, there are some issues within the state's own analysis of these emergency regulations that are contradictory. It says, as they've established looking at alternatives to these emergency regulations, that they haven't been able to find a need for additional home care agencies within New York State. But yet, that's exactly what the emergency regs are going to do. And there's several things in there, and Jonathan responded to those from that perspective as well. So that's the main concern, and trying to understand why it's happening, what the future is going to be, and doing it in such a short time frame that we really don't have the answers to any of our questions.
And I would add that those 3 weeks included Thanksgiving, and the meeting on Thursday, there will be no public comment.
Correct.
So Frank, thank you. Thanks, Frank. Frank Crota, you wanted to...
Yeah, I just want to emphasize that last point that Martha just made. Some of the data that I'd received and passed on to Joe and to Martha and to Frank that we received about 2 weeks ago, some of the information we were speculating at this State Health Planning Council meeting on Thursday that there'd be an opportunity to speak, but we found out that it is not a hearing. It's a committee meeting, and that committee will decide whether or not they will receive public comment, but the word that I had received is that they will not, that you can sit there and listen, but you won't be able to comment. The organization that Martha alluded to, I believe, is a health planning agency. It's not the organization that Joe just quoted, which is the one that Joe just quoted is vehemently opposed to this. There was some speculation about, and Kathy brought up the point, well, who's going to benefit by this? Just a reminder, the $2,000 is for an application fee. That's simply an application fee. There's no guarantee that they'll be approved. But there is also no data that we could find that indicated that there would be another fee if the application is approved. We don't know that. But the speculation is, if you remember, the state over the last couple of years, and as chair of the health committee, I can tell you this without fear or hesitation, this predates Frank Krupa, the state has periodically and systematically underfunded the health departments in the state of New York that provide this service. And that was one of the reasons that we were having some financial problems. So one of the items that, well, indirectly, there was a perception that the state wanted the counties to get out of the business because it was tightening the purse strings. Think about where the funding, where the cost shift will come from if this is approved. It will shift from Medicaid, which is the state program, to Medicare. And some of us believe that the state is using this as not necessarily a side door, but a back door to shift the funding or the cost to the federal level. And this is kind of a left-handed, I can't prove that.
Yeah.
I want to go on record and say this is all speculation, but if you know that theory, follow the money? If you follow the money and where the reimbursements are going to come from, it's very interesting to see that some of the funding is going down in this category and going up in another. Martha's absolutely right. Joe and Martha really knocked themselves out on this. Frank did. His whole department has. But some of us behind the scenes have been trying to get people's attention at the state level for certainly the last couple of weeks. This emergency deal, I'm sorry, I said that wrong. The original proposal was in the Medicaid reform deal that the governor was proposing. It did not survive that. It was plucked out of there. So the meetings, and Martha was in attendance at all of those meetings, to the best of my knowledge.
There were different parts.
Different parts. Right. Yeah, but not on this part. But at any rate, they took that out of that plan. And this now is being perceived as a way to get back in. And as we understand it, they're avoiding... They're using this procedure to avoid a legislative interaction. And when I spoke with, I didn't speak with Barbara Lifton's office, but I spoke with the other, our other three state representatives' offices. They're trying to come up with some legislative means and examining that to determine if there's a way that we could at least slow this process down so we have a chance to weigh in. There's a 90-day, I think Joe said this already, or Martha may have, there's a 90-day window. If this passes on Thursday, it begins the process of a 90-day window for any of these organizations that Joe mentioned to apply. And it could be a bloodbath. It really could, because we're all concerned about the level of service, and it looks like there could be organizations that have, as Joe mentioned, spent millions of dollars acquiring these CHAs from counties and in different places across the state. And all of a sudden, those items will be valueless or seriously reduced. Let me not say valueless, but reduced. And it's sort of a puzzling question. The governor is promoting economic development, or appears to be, and in the meantime, he's kicking these outfits in the shins that have spent all this money and have created jobs, whether you like what we did or not. That's the point, is that these things exist across the state, and they're as sideswiped as we are.
Okay, I want to ask, I've got the list here, Peter, Will, Mike, Brian, and Carol, but I want to get clarification, if I could, from Frank Krupa. Do you know whether there's any part of this that implies or would result in a shift of clients from Medicaid to Medicare?
I don't know the answer to that, and the emergency regulation documentation that they put forward is very short and very simple, and it's really to drive the Medicare redesign, managed care part, and then also to create the ability for additional CHAs in counties with less than two, and that's really all that it talks to in the emergency regs.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. Peter.
Frank, I hope you'll allow me to say the words that you don't allow me to say, but I'm sitting here in a total state of confusion. It makes no sense what you're saying, any of it. One thing has always bothered me about this is the history of why it is that they ever limited the number of CHAs in the first place. The medallion system is not very common. I first heard about it in New York City taxi cabs, where they said, okay, no more taxi cabs. All of the people that have them now have medallions, and the only way you can get a taxi cab is to buy a medallion from somebody else. And the reason for that was the unintended costs of the traffic, that the city administration was concerned about the huge traffic of taxi cabs that didn't have any passengers in them. And that was the basic reason for doing this. And in an environment where generally we believe that competition is a good thing, in an environment where we generally believe that competition is a good thing, it's rare to find examples of when people write laws to limit it. So I'm just wondering, what was the original reason for doing that? It doesn't sound like it was about the quality, because there are other ways of ensuring that any provider has got the resources necessary to deliver quality care. But why a fixed number? Can anyone answer that question? Why was it done in the first place?
Frank or Joe?
Well, I'm reasonably sure it was to make sure that there wasn't a duplication of health services. That one of the, you know, in health economics, you try to reduce the amount of duplication of service, of equipment, and so forth in a market. So the state, before they granted a certificate of need, they wanted to know there is a need for this. So that was, I believe, the underpinning behind limiting the number of CHAs in each of the counties.
See, that doesn't make any sense to me, if I may. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because believers in competition say it's okay to have duplication, because the more efficient one will succeed and the less efficient one will go out of business. Therefore, the whole society will benefit by the efficiency of the winners of the competition. That's the basic theory of capitalism in a few words. And I know why hospitals were limited, because the sense was that the empty beds are paid for by the whole healthcare funding industry. So it was against public interest to have hospitals with big fixed costs developed that had empty beds in it. That was the reason for that. Was it the same reason that applied to CHAS? Does the society sort of guarantee that the fixed cost of a CHAS that isn't filled will be paid for?
Okay, Nathan looks eager to answer that one.
Well, can I try answering? All right. So I'm going to think about this in terms of like ambulatory care centers, because this is one area where states have limited it, that had more open processes. See, the problem in healthcare, and whether it's ambulatory surgery centers or in CHAS, is that the supply is generated by hospitals a lot of the time. So hospitals will say, oh, well, we need to send a patient to a, we need to have a CHA service this patient. So what happens is that if every hospital, say, decides to create their own CHA, then they have an incentive to create a demand for it. And then so everybody creates a demand for it, and then you don't really have competition. So if you limit it, then you're actually keeping demand where it should be, rather than this fake demand that the entities will create. That's one possible argument. Does that one make more sense?
Okay, that's the first thing I've heard that makes sense to me. I can understand that.
Super.
Anyway, okay, thank you.
That sounds good. Frank, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I have nothing to add.
Okay. All right, Nathan gets the gold star. Will.
Interesting discussion. And Peter, the example you used also of the hospital, I think, it's a bricks and mortar, but there are some analogies to creating a system of home of quality home care delivery that I think are not well served by just endlessly opening it up to market forces. I wanted to quote, I think it was Claire Booth Luce, famously said that no good deed goes unpunished. We are being punished here for the deliberative process that we used. We could have done this quickly and had money in the bank. We chose to try to understand the situation and make a very, very intelligent decision that really, truly operated in the best interest of the people that are being served by our present system, as much as possible by the good folks that have been working and providing that care all these years, and try to move it on. Had we moved more quickly, we would have, unfortunately, been better off. And I'm still thankful that we proceeded as we did. I'm thankful, Joe, that you never put that in our budget, and that from the get-go that you said this is not about raising that money. So I also want to thank both Frank, Joe, and Martha for the initiative, that wonderful letter that you wrote and you shared with us, and trying to move this on a state level. I cannot understand our governor. He is endlessly perplexing to me. It would be the nicest way of framing it, but I don't think it's being good for the citizens of this state.
Thank you very much, Will. Mike, Brian, and Carol.
My question about the budget implication was answered.
Okay, Brian.
As we've gone around here, and I actually heard about this last week, and certainly learned a lot, and most of my questions have been answered, except I don't understand. Normally when you have some sort of emergency legislation, there is actually an emergency, something catastrophic, and the only thing I'm hearing now, I think this is being expedited only to keep this issue in the committee forum rather than have it being deliberated within the legislative chambers. This is the only thing I can think of here. So in that sense, I think we're probably doing all that we could have done by Frank getting a hold of the senators and somebody talking to Barbara Lifton and just be able to say, whoa, wait a minute, before it's too late, because I got to believe that if the committee is allowed to go ahead and make their ruling, which just by the term emergency, it sounds like they're going to make a change. And by then, it's going to be hard to fix. So hopefully, my hope is that this process does get slowed down in time. So right. We got, what, 2 days?
Yeah, we've talked to people in the Lieutenant Governor's office and the Governor's office.
But it just kills me that they send out and advertise this as an emergency something. And where's the emergency?
Yeah. I've got Carol, then Frank, and I also want to ask Jonathan if you have anything else to add to this, too, because we're working on this. Carol?
Yeah, as somebody who's not as involved in the health issues as many of you, staff and legislators, I'm not the right person to do this, but I hate to see us just sit here and say, oh, this is happening, woe is us, without trying to brainstorm a little bit what else we might be able to do. The question that's been asked several times in several different ways by different styles by different people here tonight, I agree with. I mean, I don't think we can be as effective fighting this if we don't have the answer to who is pushing for it. It's just hard to believe that it came out of nowhere. Or that even the reason that Frank, I absolutely believe follow the money. To be passed through as an emergency measure in a committee, that probably needs to be more than that, or somebody in some part of the private sector is pushing for it. So I would propose that we ask staff, committee chairs, to in the next couple of days, see what we can do to find out the answers to that question. I don't know if there's stuff that we can do in the press. We have a lot of press contacts these days on other topics, so maybe trying to get some more statewide press about it, at least trying to get commitments from the legislative people who can attend the Thursday meeting and ask these questions openly. These are just brainstorming ideas for me that maybe there's others in this group, but to ask that some of us legislators and staff spend some time in the next few days trying to find out the answers and issue a press release, distribute it widely, get it to contacts wherever we need to.
The press is here. Marcia's typing this up. I thought about calling, and I was planning to call Susan Arbetter and Joe Spector, John Campbell. Okay. And then I thought, it takes a long time to even explain. But I'll try that tomorrow, too. We have been spending a lot of time on this. A lot of time. So, Frank, do you have anything to add? I don't know. You can't really sniff out the code, you know? There are deals that are made, and we're not lobbyists sitting in Albany understanding, finding out what people are saying in between meetings, and if not in a minute, right?
Yeah, I would concur. Just a sidebar to that comment, what I've seen happen in the last 2 days, both from staff and Joe and Jonathan and the legislature here in response to this, has been Herculean. In my short 10 years working in the public sector, I have never seen a response to something like this happen so quickly and so thoroughly. So I think everything is being done that can be done at this point. The answer to who's driving this, I don't know that we would be able to get that in the next 2 days, because we have been trying. And I hear you, and I understand the concept of trying to know who we need to be fighting against, but that's what we've been struggling with for the last couple of weeks since this first came out, is we weren't even really sure where to go to voice our concerns about the issue.
So, we're not finished. Tomorrow's the comments have to be in by the end of tomorrow, right, Joe? Or is it today?
I think they want it by the end of today.
So the formal comments. We'll keep going. And we need to find out who's on that panel. All right. Frank, Jonathan, and then Leslin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad Frank said what he said about the staff involvement and the amount of work that has taken place in a short period of time. I can tell you, in talking with Seward's office, they inform me that they have been inundated in the last several days, and we were not the first to contact them, surprisingly enough. But one of the puzzling questions to some of us, even though this process, nobody's happy with this process, it's flawed dramatically. The question that we've been batting around, and I know Joe and I talked about it over the weekend, what happened to the Department of Health? Usually they're right there mm-hmm. informing us of what's going on, and we didn't hear anything. And that's a real concern. So that was a question that I asked the senators' offices today. Could they find out why the Department of Health didn't inform the public health departments in the counties? Anyway, I'll end there, Martha.
Thanks, Frank. Jonathan, do you have anything to add on this?
Not really. I actually was going to take a stab at answering Peter's question, but I think he's out of the room.
Walter,
guess,
go ahead. Tell him.
Can
you use the mic?
Sure. State agencies give certificates of need in all different fields, from pipelines to electric utilities to everything. And one of the major theories of certificate of needs is that the initial applicant wouldn't make an investment unless there is some guarantee that that investment wouldn't be undermined. So that's one of the, and that's probably the major reason to have certificate of needs, particularly in areas where are not very populous, where you might not have a lot of competition, because it will protect somebody in order to go into that area.
That's very helpful. Thank
you. It's like a poke in the eye, then, to the ones that already have.
Right, and this really is just small counties, because larger counties have more than two non-county CHAs. So this is really just possible. Leslie?
So Frank sort of alluded to my question, which has to do with the Department of Health and their role or involvement, or if we've spoken to anybody. I mean, we have some connection with the Department of Health. Have we spoken to anyone there since to our contact, who we deal with, to find out, to know anything more?
Last week I started calling Mark Kissinger, who is the Deputy Commissioner for Long-Term Health. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's the right title. I left a message, I think it was Tuesday. I got a return message, and then I left three more messages, nothing. Today I sent him a copy of all the correspondence we have, including who we sent it to, meaning Jim Antrone, the governor's office, and the lieutenant governor and others, and said, just want you to know, this is the correspondence we've been engaged in lately, since it's been so difficult to, and maybe we could schedule a phone call, since just trying to leave messages has been so unsuccessful. About a half hour after that, I got a message that said, I'll call you after 3:30. I haven't gotten a call back. You know, I was like, it's really frustrating. But
okay, I have a follow-up.
I apologize. Just to be quick, I think that's part of the frustration that we're having in all of this process. I called the commissioner's office directly to try to maybe catch him, and that obviously didn't work. Left messages and have not heard back. I did also reach out to the, quote, only local health department representation on this committee, which is one of the deputy directors in New York City, and her response back to me via email was that as a committee member, they were not allowed to discuss things that were going to be coming before them, and she referred me to the secretary of that committee. So that was the, and in her defense, it was related to conflicts of interest and things of that nature, and they weren't allowed to get into public discourse about those. But that was the response. So we have been reaching out to those folks, and the responses that we've been getting back have not been helpful.
Would you send all of us that email, please?
Sure.
Okay. What lesson?
Also, there is some huge tail wagging the dog here, the dog. But I also have a follow-up. So Joe, you mentioned that we have until the end of the day today to submit comments to the committee.
Yes.
But you can't. There's no public hearing and no comment period. What happens if we show up and decide to speak?
Well, we may find. I don't know if Frank is still intending to attend or not.
Well, I hope so.
I was planning to attend until we found out that we weren't going to be allowed to speak. But if you would still like me to go and attend, I would be happy to do that.
Can
and
you
represent
carry
that.
A sign?
We were joking about that earlier, that I may have to sit in the back with a sign
the
so they know who
I'm
I am.
Enough right now, because this makes no sense.
It's but outrageous. It's just usurping the public
road trip.
I think the sentiment here is that, I mean, on the off chance, maybe you will be allowed to speak, ask the question, whatever. It would be certainly better to be there than not if you can stand it.
And we've also asked NYSAC to represent us at that meeting, and they've agreed to be at the meeting, and whether they speak or not or try to wedge
well, we'll
in,
able
I don't
to
know.
Speak.
But NYSAC will be there, too.
Okay,
Carol. Yeah, just one last follow-up to what I asked. I don't think that the answer is going to come through official channels on this one. It seems like official channels have closed ranks.
Yeah.
And one reason to attend would be to talk to other people in the audience you might know and get a sense of who has more information about what went on behind the scenes on this one.
I want to remind you of what I said at the beginning, that Irene Stein's been working on this, too. She's a semi-official channel that has really good connections. Now, since this is my report, I'm just finishing on my report. That's a record, right? I do have something else to say, which is good news. Who was it who mentioned the deal? Was it Nathan during the three-way deal? The devil is obviously, as we are seeing, in the details, and I hope the whole package gets a good hearing at the legislative level. But I wanted to mention that there are also some other things in here, a New York Works Infrastructure Fund, Inner City Youth Employment Program and Tax Credit, and Jobs Retention Credit for related to natural disaster, reducing the MTA payroll tax. It looks like some things that we haven't heard about, you know, rolling around, and it sounds like there's a lot of maybe progressive good stuff that's in here.
I'm afraid of what's going to come after that.
Yeah, maybe you're right. You're probably right. So, all right. Well, that's my report. So. it's not my report. I have an appointment. Three appointments. Two appointments to the Civil War Commission, Lincoln Brennan and Marsha Lynch. Now that's my report. Thank you all. County Administrator, Joe Marion.
I just had one item that I scribbled down after this. Hearing that the chairmanship will be decided by a boxing match between Frank and Leslin, and may I be the first to congratulate Leslin on her ascension to the chair. And that's all my report.
I have been in the underdog position before, Joe. Leslin and I might make a deal.
It's the exhibition match, in all seriousness. It is the exhibition match.
All right. Thank you, Joe. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Just one very brief comment. Someone mentioned the delayed opening of the Newfield Bridge. That was, you know, I have to take responsibility for that. We were awaiting an evaluation from the state, which would indicate that it was safe to open the bridge, and it was just late in coming. So we did not want to open the bridge and risk liability until that came. And I realized that it had been announced prior that the bridge was opening, but then the state raised some issues which were resolved. They're saying it was fine and safe. But we did that for liability reasons, and we had expected the report from the state earlier, because they had indicated that we would receive it earlier. So.
Thank you, Jonathan. Frank.
I have a question for Jonathan. John, not to embarrass you, but and you know that it will.
No, you would never want to do that.
Periodically, you send us a confidential memo with the status of various cases in your department.
Right.
And maybe I've been asleep, but I haven't
receive one for a couple of three meetings. Does that mean everything's resolved?
No, I can get you one. I mean, it's been somewhat quiet, actually, with not a lot of changes since the last one, to be honest.
Oh, good.
But that's the major reason why I haven't given one in the past month or so.
Thanks. And by the way, good letter.
Thanks.
David Squires, Finance Director.
I'd like to present to the clerk copies of our latest official statement, which we had to issue $1.8 million of notes, renewal notes, that were related to financing of highway projects. The county has to borrow money when we do a project like Newfield Depot Bridge, because the state won't reimburse us until after we've paid the bills, which generally is about 9 days after we've actually paid for it. So we got an authorization many years ago, and so this is part of the remainder. But as I put on your desk a piece of good news, just to show that there are benefits for keeping our financials stable and not draining our fund balance, by maintaining good credit rating. I put the results of this financing, and on one side, we got a rate of 0.74%. Now, the market's about 1% right now for one-year notes. This is a little less than 1 year. On the back of the sheet, you'll see the last month of issuance for various entities. You'll see that 0.74 is the lowest in that period. I was actually projecting a rate of about 0.85. So I'm very happy. It's not this saved us a couple of $1,000 in interest cost. I mean, the total cost of this financing is like $8,500 for this note. But it did save us, but if we'd have paid 1% like our other people, we'd have paid a little more.
That's great. Congratulations. Pam.
David, on the side, with all the whole list of notes that have been issued, at the top it says, below are our note rates for the last 12 months. Is that our note rates, or are these notes that were issued by the communities and their rates? Is that
their rates, yes.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions for David? Thank you very much. All right, are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Pam?
Yes, I'd like to withdraw Resolution K. Hopefully it will come back to us. We can get it back at our next meeting this month.
Okay, thank you. All right, we'll go to the consent agenda, and if you have anything you want pulled, just give a shout-out. Resolution A, authorization to execute funding agreement with New York State Department of Transportation, Newfield Covered Bridge Preservation Project, BIN 3210210. Resolution B, authorization to execute funding agreement with New York State Department of Transportation, Upstream Forest Home Drive Bridge, BIN 3047450, Overhaul Creek, Town of Ithaca. Resolution C, authorizing a consultant agreement with CNS Companies of Syracuse for design, bidding, administrative, and part-time construction services for partial terminal roof replacement and repair, Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport. And Resolution D, date of 2012 organizational meeting. And the appointments to the Air Service Board, Anthony Hobson, and Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit Board, Frank Proto. There a motion on the consent agenda. Jim moves, Frank seconds. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? Those are passed unanimously. I'd like to go, could we go, Pam, to your report and the resolutions so that Ed can go home?
PDAC has not met since our last meeting. We meet tomorrow at 3:30. I have three resolutions that I'd like to add, introduce here. You all received, you should have been emailed a second revised copy And then there should, you'll have it, them in your red folder. We had a special meeting of PDAC to consider these, and we had a good, solid discussion on them, and I think that we came up with what we thought were the best ideas here. I will say that the revisions that you see, for the most part, in Resolution H, there are lots more of them. They actually are revisions that the Planning Department has done, within its comments that it's made on the SGI. So they are clarification. They clarify their comments for the most part. So I'm hoping that people will accept them. So I would like to move Resolution H. And I will have to say it first.
Pam, we have a revised in our packet. Is that what you're moving?
Yes, that's where I said that we all have revised versions in our packet, and that's the one that I'm moving. Okay, it's Resolution H, submitting comments to New York State Department of Environmental Conservation on revised draft supplemental GEIS and recommending that no new shale gas extraction be allowed in Tompkins County and New York State until and unless a more benign technology is developed. And I so move.
And Pat seconds that. All right. Let me give Pam a chance. I got Peter and Kathy. Did you want to add some more, Pam?
Well, what I would like to say is that I received a suggested addition for another whereas, and I would like to actually accept that as friendly, and it was put on your desk, and it would be the sixth whereas.
Is this the one from Dooley or Peter?
Yes, this is the one from Dooley Peter. And I think it's good. I think it clarifies what we are trying to say. And so I consider it friendly.
So it is the sixth whereas? Or
it will go in as the sixth whereas.
So on...
I'm sorry, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It will be the sixth whereas if we add it.
So it goes...
We're not replacing anything. It's an additional whereas.
So it goes above, whereas Tompkins County does not believe that the document establishes. It goes just above there, right?
It is the sixth whereas.
Okay. All right. And Pat, is that friendly to you?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I had Peter and then Kathy.
Yes. I would like to move an amendment to the resolution. And it's an amendment that is on your desk someplace or other. Amendment being offered by Legislator Stein, it says. And if there's a second, I'll speak to it.
I have a question. Peter, I thought you were amending Resolution J. This is Resolution H.
This is the one on the comments. If your yours is about the Finger Lakes region,
man, I am really confused. I thought I was I am amending. I thought a resolution that said that we should have no shale gas extraction until various things had been done, to make that a resolution saying banning shale gas extraction.
Well, what you've got here says Resolution J, and the top it says Finger Lakes region, which is. From now.
All right. Okay. All right. I'll redo it. Are you going to introduce number J?
Yeah.
Could I? Yes.
Pam would introduce J.
What Peter? What you suggested here is appropriate. Well, for most of it anyway. I mean, we are asking for a ban in J. So I don't know. What you actually meant by this. Resolution that is in J is the resolution that you change. So I don't quite know.
All right, this is, let's do H, and we'll do I, and I'll come back to J.
That sounds like a plan.
Kathy.
Thank you. Actually, my comment has to do with all three of them in that, for the public and for the sake of my colleagues, I'd just like to note that it looks to me like the first one is us, the legislature, making comments to the SGEIS. The second one is about home rule authority. And the third one is us recommending a ban. Is that true?
Yes.
The part that's confusing for me is that there's a lot of the same information basically scattered through all three of them. And they're all pretty long. And as y'all know, I'm not too crazy about long ones. However, because there's so much science behind this and because the S guys is so darn detailed, we kind of have to do this. And so I'm going to support this, even though it's all convoluted and annoys the heck out of me. I support it.
Carol.
Yeah, I just want to point out, we had a very long discussion in the committee, and Pam really made a yeoman's effort as that's a term, right? As chair of the committee to try to narrow these and group them and have us come out with no more than two resolutions. And after a lot of discussion, we decided that it made sense because there are so many different elements of this to not try to parse them any, or to group them as more solidly than this and to parse them. And that they are not mutually exclusive, that as Kathy pointed out, they are directed towards different aims, as would have the fourth one been in our packets that was calling, would have been calling for a ban in New York State. I believe that these are not mutually exclusive and that it makes sense to pass all three. And I appreciate the effort that Pam made and that the committee made to then decide to bring them this way.
Okay. Thank you, Carol. Mike?
I just want to say all these resolutions represent serious work on a complicated subject that Tompkins County has done. I think we really need to thank our planning department for a tremendous amount of effort here, and also our PDEC committee for all the work that they've put into these resolutions. I think we should be proud of these.
Yes, I agree. Thank you, Mike. Here.
I withdraw my resolution. I introduced it at the wrong time. Sorry. I'll wait till Jay.
Okay. And I wanted to mention that one of the reasons, there's a lot of overlap. Yes, that's true. But I think one of the reasons there are significant differences, because I went to the committee meeting, that the, especially Jay, the one ban, asked for a ban in the Finger Lakes. It talks a lot about things that can't be mitigated in the S guys. So the first, this first one we're talking about really are about what's in the S guys and suggesting how it should be fixed or remedied. But there are many other issues that can't be remedied through that process. So that's why the other one is one of the reasons it's not redundant. Any other comments on Resolution H? Ready to vote. All in favor, as revised, raise your hand. Any opposed? Pleased to say that's unanimous. Thank you. Pam, the next one?
Yes, I'd like to introduce Resolution J, recommending ban on horizontal drilling and high-volume hydrofracking in the... in the Finger Lakes region. I'm
going to come back to I, Pam.
I'm being influenced by Peter.
we can do...
Okay, I'm sorry. Resolution I, in support of home rule authority regarding local land use and gas drilling, New York State. And I so move.
Seconded by Frank. Should that say in New York State?
Is that what, I believe
that's
so.
That's why you stumbled? Okay. And again, you've got a revised version on your desk. Any comment, discussion? Brian.
I just would like to know, I think I've asked this question, I asked it last Thursday certainly, but does anyone know, has this got any traction at all?
Anybody got a guess?
Okay, we're reading tea leaves here. When I saw the headline that the governor was going to propose this package that had tax stuff in there and job creation stuff in there, I was worried, okay, that's where he's going to drop hydrofracking. It wasn't in there. I kind of think this is the only political solution he's got. So I'm hoping.
To support home rule?
To support home rule. So I don't know. I mean, it's just a personal opinion. I don't know that anybody knows whether it has traction. Peter?
I'd just like to respond to Brian. It can't do any harm.
What?
Passing this resolution. It may have no traction. It may have traction. We can't tell sitting in this room, but one thing it won't do is cause any harm.
I didn't suggest for a moment that I was against it.
No, I
was simply asking a question.
Right, I understand. But that's what we know. I mean, none of us know whether any of these things have any traction.
Okay. So now I know that you don't know. I was asking everyone else to see what they know.
Okay.
Am I correct that the home rule legislation that was introduced in the Assembly had bipartisan support and has a Senate sponsor as well?
Yeah, that's right.
So Democrat sponsor in the Assembly and a Republican sponsor in the Senate. So,
including our local people.
Yes, our local people. So it's bipartisan at least.
Yeah, I am aware of that.
Right.
Okay.
How the votes will go, that's hard to read tea leaves. So we're hopeful.
And I think the purpose of doing this sort of thing is that the media is here and Marcia's going to send out a thing and it'll get in the newspaper. So I think it's good. Dooley?
I would like to add the word historic in line 27 through their historic home rule powers.
Okay, that's in the first resolve, if you're looking at the
first
revised.
Resolve, yeah.
Is that friendly to...
Sure.
Yep.
Pam and Pat. Okay, great.
And I have a question based on what Carol just referenced. Should we be referencing those bills in this resolution?
No, well, let me
that's
ask...
That's fine. I just was asking. I wasn't sure why you brought it up.
Yeah, Carol, go ahead.
Because they'll go into a new session and bills may have new numbers and different sponsors, I don't think we need to. I think the essence is here.
Ed, do you want to add anything to that? Okay. Ready to vote on aye? All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. That's unanimous.
Okay. Resolution J, recommending ban on horizontal drilling and high-volume hydrofracturing in the Finger Lakes region, and I so move.
There's a second. Second by Jim. And again, this is the revised that's in your packet. Peter.
I believe I'd like to introduce an amendment.
Okay.
Resolution. If there's a second, I'll speak to it.
Yeah, oh, go ahead.
What is the amendment?
Well, what is the amendment?
The amendment is on your desks, and I'd be happy to read it to you. It's to replace the resolve clause with resolved on recommendation of the PDEQ committee that the Tompkins County Legislature finds that given the many flaws in the document, including failure to assess the wholesale industrialization of our rural landscapes, the life cycle analysis of greenhouse gas emissions from natural gas, and cumulative socioeconomic impacts of a boom and bust extraction economy, as well as recognition in the document that hydraulic fracturing poses significant risks to our water resources, that...
You forgot the that, comma.
Yeah.
Given that...
Comma.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
That hydraulic fracturing should be banned in Tompkins County and the Finger Lakes region of New York State. That's my resolution.
Okay.
That's my amendment.
And that is the only result on your larger
right.
top. It would go on the top of page 3. It's the only result besides
That's
who
the
we
only
send
result
it to.
It was.
Right. Was there a second? Jim seconds that. Okay. So, Peter, you want to talk about it?
Yes. I just felt that the original resolve says that, which I somehow can't find here.
It's there at the top of the page.
Oh, yeah. Says that finds that given that,
that no, that's the clean version of his new paragraph.
Oh, that's the clean version of the new
so
paragraph.
The
I don't have it, but what it says someplace in there is to the effect that we should not do it until certain conditions have been met. And I thought those conditions were so vague that the resolution really didn't mean anything. In fact, I think that the DEC would probably say that already those recommendations have been met after they approved the GEIS. So it just seemed to me that a simple statement that it should be banned was more appropriate to put in here than the original wording.
So the wording that you read includes the phrase, the life cycle.
Yes, it does include that phrase.
Okay.
So I accept that as friendly.
Okay.
All right, well,
was that
here
Pete?
We are, friends at last.
Was that Frank?
Jim,
no, the original resolution, Jay. Was that Jim? Jim, is that friendly?
Boy, absolutely.
Okay. All right, very good. Any comments?
So I'm not good. I'm still trying to figure out where Peter's resolve is going. What is it replacing?
Top of
the
page.
One at the top of page 3.
Right.
So that one's gone and being replaced by Peter's.
Right.
Thank you.
Wait, Carol, I just have a, I'm confused now about. So this does it include or not
yes,
include
it does
the reference
include
to the
that.
Life cycle analysis?
Yes.
So that stays in.
The thing I read, which is the resolution, does include that. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. And so his clean paragraph above does not include
does
it,
not.
But he means to insert that back in.
Right.
To insert what? I'm still trying to follow.
Okay.
It.
If you're looking at the sheet that was.
May I explain it, please?
Yeah.
Just to make it being included.
Have you got this sheet?
Got it.
Okay, if you read down in the resolve clause, the bottom thing where the changes are shown, in line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 and 6 of that, the phrase, the life cycle analysis of greenhouse gas emissions from natural gas has been X'd out, and I want to remove that being X'd out to put it back in again.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Frank, and then Dooley.
Peter, some of us struggled with this for quite a while at the committee, and I was very pleased to see that the wording that was in the original wording included an addition that I suggested, and that is that the extraction process, the hydraulic fracturing process, may pose significant risks to our water. We simply don't know. We all assume it, and everybody's talking about it. But you've X'd it out in your highlighted change. Would you consider putting that back in?
No, I don't think so. I think you have to make a judgment when you're asking for it to be banned. You have to decide that it poses. I mean, I wouldn't ban something if I wasn't convinced that it doesn't pose these risks. So I think that that wording was consistent with the original conclusion, but I think it's not consistent with the decision that it should be banned. So I'm convinced that it does pose those risks, and therefore I would want to leave it that in.
Frank?
Then I would like to ask, I don't know what the procedure would be since this was accepted as a friendly addition or replacement. Can we
move to amend it?
I'd like to move to amend to reinsert the word may in as the original resolve read.
So it's a may pose instead of poses, correct?
Yes. Fracturing may pose significant risks.
Is there a second for that? Brian seconds that. Discussion on that amendment.
Brian can't second, so.
Brian.
Can I just speak to it for a sec? I agree with Frank in that none of us here, although we have a guess, we certainly probably believe that it does. We simply don't know, and it's not going to change the way I feel about the resolution. I'm certainly in support of the resolution, but I can see where something like this probably. I think it should be there because it hasn't happened yet.
Carol, did you have your hand up before?
I wasn't sure. I'm happy with whatever we're doing.
Kathy, Peter, Carol.
To me, this looks like an opportunity to gain the support of people where the change of one word, with the change of one word, where we might lose it otherwise. I'm noticing that for some people this is really important. When it comes to the wording in the resolves, you know, that's a pretty big deal. But all the whereas is heck. Let's see if we can get a unanimous vote on this.
Peter?
No, I'm sorry. I'm still against it. The point that Frank makes is true. Anything may pose that there's a principle in science that you can never prove that something is right. You can only prove that something is wrong. And you can never prove that it actually poses a risk. But when you make a decision to ask somebody to ban it, that means that you've come to the conclusion, whether it's right or not, that it poses a serious risk. And I personally would never ask someone to ban things if I was not sure in my own mind that it poses a risk. Therefore, I think one should vote, you know, take a stand and vote for it poses a risk.
Carol, then I want to say something.
I'm going to support Frank's motion for the same reason that Kathy is. I think that both the words may and the word risk say the same thing, really. A risk means that there's a possibility that there may be a negative effect. And so it's inherent in the word risk that the industry itself says there's a risk. We acknowledge a 1.5 to 2% risk that there will be accidents and water leakage of some kind. The industry refused in various other states, including Texas, to guarantee that they would keep that level of risk below 5%. They wouldn't. They wouldn't do that. So they're acknowledging risk, and there is risk. So I think the word may is redundant, but I think it's already in there in the word risk, so whether we keep it in or not, if it's going to mean that we have a unanimous vote here, I think I'm arguing for keeping it out, but I will vote for keeping it in because it just doesn't seem that important to me.
Yeah.
Okay, and then again, I think Frank and then Carol Dooley. I'll skip my turn. Frank and Julie.
Thanks, Martha. Thanks, Carol. I just want to remind the group that the five members of the Planning Committee voted to put the word may in. And I'm a little concerned that at this late juncture, we're doing committee work at the board level. But that's okay. We do a lot of that. Peter, I don't mean to disagree with you. You're more of a scientist than I am, a physics scientist anyway. I challenge you on the agronomy level, but the concern that I have is I think it should be in there because even though you may know, I don't know, and I'd like to err on the side of caution.
Julie and I will say Julie?
Well, I thought Carol did a very good job of explaining a nuanced use of words, but I wanted to speak about the actual comments that are being submitted by the Water Resources Council as well as the EMC, where there's just no question but that the risk is posed. And it seems as though we should take our lead from our advisory groups in that regard, as well as planning staff.
So I agree, and Pat, after me, I agree with that. I agree especially with what Carol said, that risk means it might happen. We're not saying we will have damage to our water resources. We're saying this poses risks to our water resources. I think that's accurate. Pat?
I was just going to say that I agree with Carol's description of the impact of the use of the word may versus not using it, and I think she summarized it very well. I also, I think that in order to support the argument that we're making regarding a ban, I don't think it's absolutely necessary that we eliminate the word may here, because there are so many other reasons already listed in this paragraph that support the ban, so that even if we include the word may here, which, as Frank points out, is the way that five of us on the committee passed it through to the legislature, I don't think it undercuts the argument that's being made. So I would support going back, including the word may.
Are we ready to vote, Pam?
Well, I just have to say that my memory of the committee meeting is that Frank, that was part of a group of suggestions that Frank made, and that we voted to accept some of the changes, but we never voted on the May. So I do not believe it was voted on by the committee.
Jim?
We're going to get an opportunity to vote on the May, I think.
Okay, I read a vote, and I think Will wasn't at that meeting, so it was whatever. The number was 4. So, all right, are we all set? So this is a vote on the amendment.
No, we accepted the amendment.
Frank's amendment. So the vote is, so you want to say yes if you want this to say that hydraulic fracturing may pose significant risks. Right, Frank? Okay.
Yes. Wait, I thought it was taken out with Peter's amendment.
Yeah, and
Peter's language, which we accepted, says hydraulic fracturing poses significant risks.
Right.
Frank wants it to say hydraulic fracturing may pose significant risks. Okay? So a yes means that's what it'll say.
Okay?
All in favor of that amendment, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. Opposed? I got the count. Okay, 11-4, that passes. So that's what it'll say. It'll say may pose significant risks. Okay. We are back to the main motion. Is there any other discussion on J as revised? Carol.
Yeah, I'll just say quickly, this is one that I had some mixed feelings about. I believe there ought to be a ban in all of New York State, that we don't, given what we say in all the rest of these. I would prefer to see us calling for what's good enough for New York City watershed and Syracuse watersheds is good enough for us. That's what this does. What's good enough for the Finger Lakes, to me, is also good enough for the rest of New York State. But I understand where this is coming from. I believe that it is, I will support it. It comes from the same place that says, for each of our towns, that each of our towns ought to have the right to say, to determine what happens within their borders. And I do believe that the Finger Lakes is a particularly unique resource that ought to be protected. This does not mean, I'm not going to use a double negative, I do support a ban in all of New York State, but along the way to that, I will support bans in our various towns, and I will support calling for a ban in the Finger Lakes as well.
Okay, and Pam, you said you plan to bring back Resolution K.
If it passes committee tomorrow.
No, to the committee, the statewide ban is going to go to the committee tomorrow. And because the comment period was extended, we will be able to, at the legislature, consider at our second December meeting. So we'll be able to vote on it then. Okay, all set? Ready to vote on revised J? Please, all in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's really beautiful. Thank you, folks. This is really terrific work by the committee and by the whole legislature and the planning staff. Thank you, Ed. Really grateful for this. All right, you have other things, Pam?
That is it.
No, there's the solar. That's F&I? Okay. All right. Frank?
Just a quick question for Pam. Pam, Resolution K, which you pulled, will the version that was in our folder be the one we're talking about at the committee meeting tomorrow?
Well, that's my plan, unless a different one appears by tomorrow.
Okay, just for clarification.
Right. That's the plan.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Why don't we take a break now and come back in 5 minutes? Recess.